I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to another episode of the Penscast Mailbag. Today being Monday, November 20th, 2023. It is Thanksgiving week. We are rapidly approaching the one and true Thanksgiving holiday on Thursday. And this week, due to the mix-up with the holidays and stuff, we are doing just one mailbag this week. We have, I believe, 15 questions. And as you see, it is Robbie here and Snail, your overlords of the Penscast, it seems, right now. Garrett is saying that his recording space has been stolen by some children, which does not make sense because you should just fight them. But he did give us some answers, so we will get underway here. Before we do, Snail, how you doing on this Monday afternoon?
Doing good. It's this is going to be a chill week. Work is light. The holiday is upon us, and we got some fun hockey games going forward. Some fun Pens matchups, and yeah, all is good out here on the West Coast, the best coast.
Yeah, that's arguable as well, but I'm not going to get into a debate about that right now. So, as you see, no Garrett this week. So, he does have his answer, so he will still be taking every third question. I will lead us off. The first question was from Tony Gale. If 68, meaning Jaromír Jágr, is headed to the Raptors, then why not Brassos at 35? My answer to that question is, one, Brasso is a very complicated figure. Not that Jágr isn't, but I think kind of a more complicated figure is Tom Brasso with how he treated fans and the media in Pittsburgh. Very crucial to those two Stanley Cups in 91 and 92, but Jágr, a much more, I'd say, historically important figure in Penguins history. Brasso, again, a very important player, but not to the level that 68 was. Again, you can't just keep retiring numbers left and right. But the story of Jaromír Jágr in Pittsburgh goes much deeper than what happened on the ice. His play kept the team in Pittsburgh basically solely outside of what Mario did. He's probably the second most responsible person for keeping the Penguins in Pittsburgh. Brasso had some gaffes that probably cost the Penguins another cup or two during his time in Pittsburgh, and just really not the overall impact that that Jágr had. A Brasso, well-deserving of the Hall of Fame, but I do not believe his standing with the franchise is what Jágr's is at this moment. So unless that changes, I just can't see 35 ever being raised to the rafters in Pittsburgh.
I think that this question kind of shines a light a little bit also on what it means to be great. And I think that this question perfectly kind of, yeah, like I said, shines a little bit of a light on, like, Jágr had a great personality. He was great with the fans, and he was just an all around outstanding person as well, or on the ice as well as off the ice. Where Brasso, you know, he was integral to those two cups, but there is a little bit of a shadow cast on his character. And we're debating whether, if he was a fan favorite, if he had like Flower-esque persona, yeah. I mean, it might be a total, it's like, why, like, yeah, get that guy in the Raptors. He loved Pittsburgh. He was great with the fans. He was a media favorite. And you know, in sports, I think it's sometimes it's hard to be it's hard to be in scrums with the media all the time, win or lose. Like, that would wear on you, I think, just as a human. But I think, kind of like I said, Jágr is embraced because he was an awesome person. He was an awesome player as well as off the ice, where Bourassa isn't. And so I think that should be almost like a, there's a lot of great athletes out there, but it's like your legacy, it carries off the ice, off the field, wherever it is as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely completely fair. And Jágr, obviously there was some mid-career angst with Penguins fans after he left the Berg, but that is completely gone. Those hatchets, whatever they are, have been buried, and he's completely back in the good graces of the franchise and the fans. So no surprise to see 68 going to the rafters. Question number two here again from Tony Gale. With Jágr returning to Pittsburgh in February, do you think they will leave the door open for a full-time return to the Penguins in a coaching role after he retires as a player?
No, I don't think. I always blank on the name. What are they called? The group that owns them?
The Penguins? Oh, Fenway Sports Group.
Fenway Sports Group. I always want to say, I always get a different... Yeah, Fenway Sports Group. They're not going to, but I'll tell you why they should. And that is 766 career goals, 1,155 assists, 1,921 points, 217 goals on the power play. And just for a little bit of a comparison, Mario Lemieux, the magnificent one, Le Magnifique, 236 power play goals. So I think some of those numbers, those numbers, along with the enigma that is Jaromír Jágr, just kind of that lighthearted, kind of like loosey-goosey attitude. I think that the Penguins could use some of that behind the bench. Kind of like a little bit of a page out of Edmonton, where they put Paul Coffey behind the bench there.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's got a presence about him, and sometimes that Penguins bench and that locker room, just from the snippets I see, it's mild in there. It's a little tight. It's a little bit, maybe a little bit boring. Put Jágr in there. And how cool would it be to see Jágr whispering in Sid and Gino's ear when they're like getting back to the bench after a shift, and Jager's like, dude, he sees something, you know, he sees something, and he simplifies the game for them in a way. Or taking like a young player, like someone like imagine seeing Jágr having a sit down with like Drew O'Connor or something. It's like, dude, that guy has scored some goals. He's made some plays. He's just the little tips and tricks and knowledge that he could bestow on some of these, as we've called them, just kind of guys, average players. I mean, the wealth of knowledge, and I think the overall attitude that Jágr could bring to a locker room is just, it's immeasurable. It'd be fantastic. But I don't think Fenway Sports Groups has the stones to do it. Any thoughts on that, Robbie?
I mean, if the opportunity would ever come around, again, we're talking about Jaromír Jágr retiring, and which is in itself, who knows when ever, if ever. Again, dude might just straight up be buried at center ice during a game at some point. I don't know. But I think I don't know how he would, if he'd ever want to be a coach. Like, I have no idea if he'd ever want to get into coaching. I really can't say. I mean, that's a factor in it as well. He has to want to do it. You can't just say, hey, come over here and do it. Does he have the personality to do that? I don't know. We'll find out if he ever retires. But again, I think if he would come over and say, hey, can I take on even a developmental role? I think something could be worked out, even if it's part-time, to come over and work with some guys. But I mean, it all comes down to if he ever retires to begin with. Like, again, I don't know what happens with the team he currently owns once he retires. Like, is that going to take up most of his time? That he might not even have time to come over and coach. So I guess we'll all see how that pans out in the coming years.
And I'm asking this, this is kind of putting you on the spot here, but this is coming at you with all sincerity and honesty. Right now, would you take 50-year-old Jaromír Jágr on a league minimum deal to plug in on the second power play unit and fourth line, maybe third line, maybe the 12th forward position, would you take Jaromir Jagr right now?
I'd have to see how he skates on a North American type surface. I'd have to even say give him time in the AHL just to see how he can skate against other on a North American rink in the North American game. It's a completely different from the European game. The ice surface is smaller. Everything happens quicker. Not that he can't still play. I just, man, 50 is, again, the age does catch up, and he hasn't played an NHL game in since before COVID at this point.
Like eight years, I think.
Yeah, I would have to see. I think I have the stats up here. He hasn't played since 2018, so we're over 5 years at this point. I would be very hard-pressed. I'd have to see him skating against North American professionals before I'd say yes or no to that question.
He stays in impeccable shape, and he's a massive dude. I don't think you're looking at him to back check and play or, you know, cross his T's and dot his I's defensively. But I would do it. I'd be like, you know what? Let's just see how this goes. You're better than Carter at 50 as is. But anyways, just maybe that's a little bit of like a mile in Kyle's shoes for you. If Jagr came up to you at the retirement and he looks you dead in the eyes and he shakes your hand and he says, I want to play. Just sign league minimum. I'll pay for pennies. Just put me out there on the second unit PP, 12th forward. I think you got to do it. All right, let's move on from that question. So this is technically Garrett's question.
He did give us an answer. So read off the question, and I'll answer. I'll give him. I'll read off his answer.
Tony Gale asks. Cadbury Dairy Milk or Hershey's? There's only one right answer here. So what is Cadbury Dairy Milk? Is that like a dairy product? Like is that just raw milk or something?
I think it's chocolate. It's just how it's made. Garrett says Hershey's chocolate sucks. Cadbury chocolate rolls. Garrett, you're from Pennsylvania. The standard answer is Hershey's always. I'm a Hershey's chocolate fan myself, so I'm going to say Garrett is wrong here. I mean, he has his own opinions, but I have my opinion that he is wrong. So, and basically, I mean, I can just ignore all these answers technically. What's Garrett going to do about it? He ain't going to create his own episode. But
what you could do is read Garrett's answer, and then we just berate him while he's not here to defend himself.
Yeah, so he says Hershey's chocolate sucks, Cadbury chocolate rolls. Garrett, that is a wrong opinion. But that means there's more Hershey's chocolate and Hershey's goodies for me to consume. So if you want to have that opinion, fine by me. You can eat the inferior Cadbury option.
I kind of take that as Garrett has no like hometown allegiance. Like I think he hates Pennsylvania.
Yeah, he has no state pride. It's really disappointing. No pride in the Keystone State, but. Whatever, his opinion, not mine.
Is Pennsylvania the Keystone State? I've heard you guys say that a few times. Is that have anything to do with Keystone, the beer? Keystone
Light? No. So basically, Keystone State goes back to colonial times, where if you look at the map, Pennsylvania looks like a keystone in the colonies. Meaning, if it wasn't there, everything else would fall apart. It's kind of like definitely kind of a brag on our own. But again, when you create your own state. Nickname, you can call it whatever you want, but yeah, so Keystone State is just our state nickname. Yeah, that's gotcha. Basically it. Yeah, all right, question number four, Tony Gale. This one's coming back to me here. Tony Gale says, mixed opinions on Jagr. When I was chatting with a few fans there last Christmas, I'm assuming he means in Pittsburgh, what's the general feel about 68 heading to the rafters? Jagr is one of the reasons I started following the Penguins back in the 90s. Tony, I don't know how active you are on social media, but when this was announced, the jersey retirement was announced, basically everyone just let out in celebration. A lot has changed since he left in 2001. I mean, we're looking at 20. By the time the jersey retirement happens, we will be on the eve of like the 23rd anniversary of his trade out of Pittsburgh. So there's a lot that has changed in over two decades. So the original angst and frustration and anger toward Jágr has greatly subsided. I'm not saying some fans don't still hold a bit of a grudge, but that has all, at least from the franchise perspective and Jágr's perspective, that is all dead and buried. Most of the fans that, especially like you and I, Tony, and even Garrett, who grew up with 68 in some way, definitely understand what he meant to the franchise and are extremely, extremely happy to see this finally happening. And I really can't wait for it to come. Yeah, it's going to be a great night, a great event, and I'm sure there'll be stuff leading up to in the days prior to all this happening. It's going to be fantastic, and I really can't wait.
I got to chime in quick on this. Tony, I feel like you're thinking about it a little too much. Like, yeah, it sucked when Jágr left, and there's people that were bummed. But you know what they say? Grief, I have it right here. Grief is love with nowhere to go. It sucked that he left, but Jágr is not just a Penguins legend. He is, if you're a fan of hockey, he is a hockey legend. He is like, he's like hockey royalty. He's just an enigma in the game. And it's an honor that he wants the, like, you know, if he was sour on Pittsburgh, he could have totally been like, I'm not really feeling the retirement. There's some sticky feel. Dude, Pittsburgh gave him his start, and he wants, this is awesome. This is awesome for the game. It's awesome for Jágr. I would say just don't think about it too much. It's going to be an awesome night to celebrate. It's going to be awesome to see Jágr in PPG. I hope he's got the mullet just rocking, maybe some tight denim, throwing it back to the early 90s. I'm super excited to hear what he's going to say. I hope he has some sort of really choppy speech written up, and it's going to be emotional. I can tell you that. So I'll digress, but I'm so juiced for this. It's going to be awesome to have the spotlight back on Jágr.
Yeah, it'll certainly be quite a night, and I'm really looking forward to, again, not just what happens in Pittsburgh, but across the league, their reaction to kind of the whole thing. Question number five from Edward Beckham. I do not recall this name, so Edward, if this is your first time asking questions, we thank you very much for being a listener and participating. So get to this question here. It says, how do you feel about the NHL Global Series, meaning their international games? Would you like to see the Penguins take part in it? Tony Gale also had a question in this vein as well. I'd second that. In the UK, we've had the NHL at Wembley, the NBA at the O2 Arena in London, Major League Baseball at London Stadium. Surely it's time for the NHL to make an appearance. How about a stadium game at Wembley would be immense?
So I actually kind of toiled with this question a bit. I put myself in the shoes of like the Maple Leafs or like the Wild or the Red Wings or Ottawa who are overseas right now growing the game, which I think is great. I have no qualms with growing the game. I think it's awesome. There is hockey in those, there's hockey all over the world. And I think that it's important. It's almost the NHL's duty in a way to go in to these places and just shine a light on the hockey culture that exists there already and play these games. I think it's important. But I'm kind of a selfish guy, and selfishly, if the Penguins right now were going overseas to play two games, and you know, you're messing up the schedule. There's not the schedule. You're messing up the players' schedule. Like, games are at like 8 a.m. or whatever. And like, technically our Pittsburgh time, it would be 8 a.m. Travel fatigue. And with the Penguins' kind of shaky start to the season, especially coming out of October, and they've been doing pretty well in November so far, but selfishly, I would be like, why are we doing this stuff? Like, why can't they just be playing games at PPG? Hell, even a West Coast trip seems close to home compared to going across the pond and playing over in the UK or in Finland or in Sweden or something. So I'm torn, because I think it's important, but I have a selfish side, and I'm like, I don't want the Penguins going and doing that. I think they need to take care of business at home, or in even, like I said, even in their own country, away games would seem like a home game compared to overseas. So that's where I sit. But if I'm taking my selfishness out of this, then I think the NHL does need to look into finding ways to grow the game, maybe not so much even in places that have the hockey culture, but like I hear rumblings of Mexico City. That would be so cool, finding a way to get a hockey game played in Mexico City. They did Australia the preseason with LA and I believe it was Arizona. I don't know. Finding ways to get creative to play the game of hockey in other markets where maybe it doesn't exist. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. So I guess to put it simply, yes, but selfishly, no. Robbie, what about you? What do you think about growing the game overseas, playing these global series games? Where do you stand on all of that?
Yeah, I think the Penguins played one in 2008 in Stockholm, and that was before it really blew up. That was like the very beginning of everything. I think with FSG at the helm, it's going to happen. Even if Mario never would have sold, I think it's going to happen. You saw preseason games in Australia this year. They're going to explore more avenues in, especially in Europe, where the game is, I mean, massive in some places, but budding in other places. England is one that has started to scratch the surface of. They've participated in a few world championships now. The game is really growing there. France is the same. Places like Germany, Czech Republic, Finland, Sweden, Norway, already hockey hotbeds. I mean, you saw it with William Nylander, was basically front and center of the whole press tour when Toronto went over. So, I mean, yeah, you're going to see it back over there. The Penguins, I think everybody's going to get a taste of it at some point. The Penguins don't really have right now a key, I'd say, figure. That, I mean, Crosby's American or Canadian. Malkin's Russian. They're definitely not playing in Russia anytime soon. Other than that, I mean, Rust, Gensel are both Americans. Raquel, I mean, is he that big of a name in his home country? Probably not. I could see them playing in Prague just for the Jager connection at some point in the Czech Republic. I mean, you do have Radim Zahorna. I guess Erik Karlsson's a star. But again, they're in Sweden this year. I don't know how quickly they'll go back to Sweden. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where they could put the Penguins. The Penguins could be a team that they send to for a preseason-type global series in a Japan or New Zealand or something like that. So I think that's more or less what the Penguins could be looking at. But I think every team's going to get a taste of it here in the next 5 years.
Agreed. I think it's only going to become more of a thing every year. We're going to be looking forward to it. I think that the Penguins going up into Nova Scotia and playing that preseason game, I think that that's kind of like that. Nova Scotia doesn't have an NHL team, and Sidney Crosby's, you know, arguably still one of the face of the league, definitely one of the faces of the league. So anyways, yeah, I think so that you could say we're in favor of it. It's fun. It's something to look forward to. Definitely different. Let's see here. Going to our next question, which would be question 6 from Kim Larson. Kim asks, do you believe the rumors that San Jose is losing on purpose, essentially throwing games so they can get the number one draft pick in the draft lottery? And if they are, could the NHL punish them if they are, in fact, losing deliberately? And Garrett had an answer for this.
He said, I don't think San Jose is losing on purpose. They're just a bad hockey team with bad players. And I'll expound on that a little bit. I agree with that. And you can absolutely build a team to lose on purpose or to be just not very good and tanking for a high draft pick. Players, it's not in their DNA to just throw games and lose on purpose. They're playing, they still have pride. They still have, they're still trying to make a mark. Could be trade pieces, could be trying to put together a season for a new contract, a next contract. I do not believe the players are losing on purpose. That team is deliberately set up to fail, but players are not going to let it fail without trying 100% their best. And as the NHL punishing them, you'd have to prove that the players are losing deliberately. At that point, it'd be almost like match fixing. You'd have to investigate from almost that perspective. But again, that would be just almost impossible to prove in the league. It's not going to waste resources on that. Again, you've had Buffalo basically was flat out tanking for McDavid. You've had bad teams before. The Penguins basically flat out tanked to get Mario. So, I mean, it's hard to prove, but I don't see them ever getting to the point where they would even explore something like that unless there was a complete smoking gun of like emails or text messages saying that this was what the players are doing. Question number seven here. This is from Kim as well. When Jágr has his jersey retired in February, what Penguin logo do you think will be on the banner? Do you think it will be the Robo Penguin? Well, so Mario's jersey does not have a logo on it. It has like a color scheme. And his color scheme, I believe, I could be wrong on this, but I do believe it is reminiscent of the color scheme used during the Robo Penguin years. So I would think that Jágr would be similar to that. Jágr played most of his Penguins career with the Robo Penguin because it came around right after they won those first two cups. I believe it'll be white. White will be the main color, the primary color. I believe it'll be very similar to what you see at 66 up there. It'll have the number along with the years he played in Pittsburgh. Unless they decide to redo both to match the current color scheme, but I really see it being a very similar to Lemieux's number up there, mimicking kind of the Robo Penguin jerseys. But I think it'll just be a number with the name and the years played. I don't think there will be an actual physical logo on it. So yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to, more of a color scheme than, the logo itself. Question number eight, again from Kim, this one's going over to Snail here. What are your thoughts on the manslaughter charges and arrest on the player who hit/cut Adam Johnson?
Well, I'm going to first off say that I have no idea how laws really work over in the UK, and I didn't bother to educate myself too much on that before coming on this podcast. Secondly, I'll say that it's all just extremely unfortunate. Like this, before that game, these guys were, this was like, can you imagine just like the whirlwind that guy who got arrested is in? I'll say this. I saw the play. I saw the horrendous video that led to Adam Johnson losing his life on the ice. The play was reckless. I don't think that guy, and I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me. He played in that three ice tournament that's during the summer. From what I hear, he's an awesome guy. The play was reckless. He was not trying to kill Adam Johnson. He was not trying to. He wasn't trying to do anything that would result in the fate that happened to Adam Johnson. But I will say, watched a lot of hockey in my life. I haven't really ever seen a play that resulted in a motion. Like, I have never seen anything, essentially, that had really... I've never seen what happened in that video happen before. And I want to... I think it's not going out on too much of a limb here and saying that it's extremely reckless play. And so this isn't, you know, a first degree murder charge. This isn't conspiring or whatever, you know, this isn't some true crime shit we're about to see unfold here. Manslaughter is, as far as I know in the United States, manslaughter can happen if you're driving a car and you unintentionally hit someone or end someone's life. That's a manslaughter charge. And that's, like I had said before I really started getting into this, is that I have no idea how the laws really work over in the UK, but I could assume it's probably something similar where a reckless act resulted in the death of Adam Johnson. And I don't think that he is, you know, he hasn't been nothing's been proven yet. There isn't a lot of answers out there for the outcome of this this player. But there'll be an investigation. I don't really know what manslaughter charges look like over there, especially one that's in a hockey game where, you know, you're signing up to play in a league where it's a dangerous sport. There's some fine print that protects this player to a certain extent. But a reckless play did result in the loss of a life, and that will be investigated and looked into. And that's as much as I can really talk or speak on regarding the matter. Like I said, rest in peace to Adam Johnson. That was just horrific, and thoughts and prayers go out to his family, and as well as the person that inflicted the cut that happened on the ice. That guy's life has been flipped upside down, and he's out there playing hockey, man. This isn't some true crime story. This is just unfortunate all around. So let's move off of that bit of a bummer question, but I think it's a good question, and maybe we're shining a little bit of light on as far. Did you want to add anything to that, Rob?
No, I mean, again, English law is much different than American or even Canadian law. I think a lot of people saw the news and immediately thought he was being arrested and charged. Like, it's much, from what I understand, I did see some people who are familiar with English law kind of give their take on it. And it's not as clear cut as what you'd be used to in the United States. So, good question. But I think best to let up the experts on this one, just see how it all plays out without dropping a hot take and then just finding out 2 weeks later that we have absolutely no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, the player was Matt Petgrave. And, you know, again, just it's that things suck for that guy right now, too.
Yeah.
And he's not an enemy. I mean, it was an unfortunate accident. I just hope that people out there are keeping level heads, which the internet proves every day to me that no one out there does. But I'm hoping that maybe people listening to this can find a little bit of patience and compassion for this individual, because his life has been flipped upside down, and that was not what he was intending to do.
Absolutely. All right, next question is a Garrett question.
Moving on, it's a Garrett question. Let's see here. Kim Larson asks Garrett, do you think we should have kept John Marino, and are you okay with the trade?
Garrett says, yes, absolutely, we should have never traded John Marino. Ty Smith hasn't amounted to anything. Another Ron Hextall classic.
All right, I want to chime in on this a little
bit. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I think this could be looked at two ways, because in the moment, I didn't like the Marino trade for Smith. I thought Marino was kind of, wasn't it like a sophomore slump a little bit? Could it be chalked up to that essentially?
Yeah,
I mean, he had a hell of a rookie year. He was looking like a gem that the Penguins picked up, and then a little bit of a sophomore slump. And then people were just clamoring that he was having like a Norris caliber season in Jersey. It was a 50-50 split. He had a great first half of the season that was making that trade look horrible. But then his season did not finish as strongly as it started. Let's just say that. I think that what Hextall was trying to do was make the back end, the defensive core back there, bigger. And John Marino is not a big guy. He's an excellent offensive-minded, puck-moving defenseman who can kill penalties. He's a smart player out there. I'm not mad at trading John Marino, because right now, if we didn't know Erik Karlsson was coming in a couple years when that trade happened. But right now, I think moving a guy like John Marino would not moving a guy like him would not have been the biggest deal. But it was that exact trade for Ty Smith, who's another undersized defenseman who right now, let's be totally honest, I don't know if he's ever coming out of the American Hockey League. Like, I don't know if that guy will play an NHL game again. And I'm trying not to exaggerate, but that guy is he's forgotten how to play hockey a little bit. He looked good in the preseason, but that's the preseason. There's a couple of players that are going to play in front of Ty Smith, even given an injury or multiple injuries. P.O. Joseph is not playing games right now. This Riley Shea guy, hell of a player. He is looking like an awesome pickup. I think that he kind of reminds me of like an Olli Maatta, like a better Olli Maatta. What the potential of Olli Maatta was supposed to be. He's got some patience out there. He's got some confidence. I mean, that's a guy we picked up this season, and Ty Smith has not been linked to getting any sort of call up. I don't really know how he's doing right now in the American Hockey League, but I think it's safe to say he's not exactly making any noise down there. It is a horrible trade. Robbie, I'll pass it over to you. But overall, I think we can give that trade grade an F.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that as well. I think that what's been said about that trade, if we could go back and reverse it, we would, but we can't. And again, the hype about Marino being a Norris Trophy candidate, don't buy that. But he would easily be in the lineup for the Penguins if he played, if he was still in Pittsburgh. But it is what it is. Move on from that. And I think overall right now, though, the Penguins' defenseman core, it's not too bad. I'll take Erik Karlsson over John Marino, though. Let's put it that way.
True. And, like, it's not like Marino is going to play third pairing. Like, he's not a third pairing defenseman. No. He's a top four. He's a second pairing right shot guy. I think that's where he's kind of cemented himself. It's an embarrassment of riches, and it's not what you necessarily want on a third pairing. I think we could both agree that if moving Marino, he's a good piece. He could have used him, I think, for a better, different type of player. But the Ty Smith, it wasn't a lateral move. It was a downgrade. So let's get off that before we need to take blood pressure medication, because that one still stings.
All right, question number 10, again from Kim here. This one's coming back to me. How will Jake Guentzel's new contract look like, and how much is he worth? Kim, your answer is probably as good as mine on this. I think his contract, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough for me because he's going to get paid. I hope he gets paid in Pittsburgh. I how much is he worth? I think when he's producing, he's worth his weight in gold. I mean, this is a guy that scored 40 goals in the NHL. If you're very serious about still competing during the Crosby Malkin era, you got to bring him back. And that's as simple as that for me. He plays well with Crosby. He thinks like Crosby. He produces with Crosby. And he has basically since he came into the league in 2017. He is Crosby's right, or I guess left-hand man, I guess, technically on the roster. But I pay him. I think he's worth at least what's he making now? I can't remember off the top of my head.
It's, well, like, what? Sorry to interrupt, but like, who are some comparables to a Guentzel player? Like taking what he's like, taking our like emotions and our whatever, like our attachments to a Jake Guentzel. Who are some comparables in the league that score like he does and play a similar position? Like, is it crazy to say like a Brad Marchand or like a Timo Meier are comparables to a Jake Guentzel?
Yeah, I think he's a better goal scorer than Meier. Meyer's never hit 40 in his career. He's making $6 million a year on his current deal. I think he's going to get at least that on his next deal. He got 5 years last time. This is a 5-year deal. I think you give him another 5-year deal, maybe a slight with the salary cap will jump a little bit this offseason, with a slight pay increase maybe, but I think he's going to be in that $6 million.
You do?
Yeah, I don't see how he's not. I don't think he's not done anything during this contract to warrant a pay decrease from the Penguins.
No, I don't think it decreased at all. Pasternak got 11.5.
Yeah,
he's a right winger, right shot, different type of guy. Sebastian Aho is a center, but he got, what is it, 9.5? Marchand's making 6.125, but you know they've got that thing in Boston where they don't take more than Bergeron made. Timo's making 6. I think Jake could ask for 9. I think that if that's where the contract went, like I don't think he's a $10 million player. He's looked actually quite pedestrian. This is a big year for Jake, and I think at times he's looked quite pedestrian. But would it be a shock if he were to be asking for 9 on his next deal? A 9x5?
I don't think he can get that from the Penguins, but it would
open market?
Open market, yeah. Talking. Yeah, open market. I think that, but the Penguins I don't know if would go that high.
Do you think that do you have any wavering in the idea of re-signing Gensel? Do you think that he's a guy that you let walk and you bring in someone else? Or is he someone that you want to retire a Penguin? Is he someone you want to see play as a Penguin late in his career? Where do you stand on re-signing Gensel?
I stand on you do re-sign him. Penguin for life, I mean, not many players can say that they play with one team their entire career. Again, who knows what happens after Crosby and Malkin are gone. Does a guy like Jake become a nice trade piece one of those years the Penguins are just bad? Let's say they give him a 6-year deal with 2 years left in that contract when Crosby and Malkin are maybe gone. Is he maybe a piece that you trade for a first-round draft pick at the deadline? Maybe you recap a bit of money on that to get that deal done. But, there's just very few players out there that score 40 goals that hit the open market, even less guys that have the chemistry that Jake does with Crosby. I think you pony up and get him. You try to do whatever you can. I don't think his asking price can go above $9 million, but on the open market, you never know. But maybe hometown discount, get that for 7.5, and let's call it a day. Get him there for 6 more years, and we roll with that. We roll with the high cap hit once everybody's out the door and we're on to a new era of Penguins hockey.
I'd be careful of that Billy G in Minnesota once his contract starts, once these contracts start happening. Jake Gensel's a Minnesota guy. I think he's actually like a Nebraska guy or something weird like that, but he lives in Minnesota in the off season. I think that's where he grew up kind of playing hockey. His dad like a coach or something in Minnesota?
Yeah.
Anyways, so Minnesota guy, some of that cap hell that Minnesota's in right now, that's going to come off the books eventually. And I could see Billy being like, dude, this is a Minnesota guy. If whatever the Penguins are giving you, I'll give you more. I would be weary of old Billy G out there in Minnesota if Jake were to hit the open market.
Yeah,
but that's a conversation for another day, so let's move on here. Jake's a Penguin for now.
All right. Question 11 from Kim again. This one's going to Snail. What are the top 3 logos in the NHL, and what are the 3 worst logos? Not just jerseys, but the actual logo itself.
Yeah, not jerseys, because that's a whole – I could get into that. That's a whole mess, but – yeah, I was actually thinking about this quite a bit. I looked over the questions last night, and I think I'm going to leave the Penguins logo out of it because, like, it's just, like, bias. It's like, well, it's what the logo – I don't even want to get into all that. But, like, just as, like, a visual, pleasing to the eye type of deal, thing that gives me kind of a – makes you feel something, honestly, like – The Detroit Red Wings, the winged wheel, it's just so good. It's just a good logo. It's iconic. It's classic. You know exactly what it means. It's old-timey hockey to me. Unfortunately, the Flyers have a great logo as well. I mean, like, despite what that team means to a Penguin fan, the Flyers have a great logo and a great color scheme. It's iconic. It just makes me feel and think a certain – it's like nostalgic. You know what I mean? I would say Detroit, the Flyers, and then it's a, probably one of the original six. It's got to be like the Maple Leafs or the Chicago Blackhawks. I've never been a huge fan of the Bruins logo or the Rangers, and I'm trying to take fandom out of it. I hate the Rangers. I don't really like Boston. The Blackhawks, probably. I like that. It's just it's old timey. It just like makes me like feel like I just think of hockey. You know, Bobby Hull. It makes me think of winter. Makes me think of grittiness. But it's anyways. I'd probably go with Detroit. I'm gonna take Flyers actually out of there. I'm gonna go Detroit, Chicago, and I hate Toronto so much, but that is a great looking logo, the Maple Leaf. How that's just hockey. That's Canada. That's old timey. It's classic. It's good. It's sharp. I want you to chime in on this too, Robbie. What are your top three logos out there? A runner up would actually be Minnesota for me too. I like the Wild logo, but I'll digress.
My top three best logos, I'm going to go with the Buffalo Sabres with the logo they use now, just with the Buffalo, and then the actual swords on the crest are absolutely excellent for me. Who else I'm going to go with here? So many good options on these. I'm going with the Flaming Sea. In Calgary, especially with their new color scheme, the Flaming Sea is iconic, and really just kind of brings it all together. A great logo there. And my third and final one on these top logos, and maybe I'm in the minority here, but the Senators going back to that 90s logo with like, it kind of looks like the head, what you'd see on a coin almost. Just really love that logo. A logo that I kind of grew up with around the league is one right there. And as for logos that I find bad, let's see where we at here. The Kings have a great classic logo. The new one is just way too modern and just very boring. The Ducks logo, their main uniforms is just the D foot is just so boring and just so sad.
Bring back Darkwing.
Yes, bring back Darkwing full time. To me, it is just so sad. And my third and final on here is the Winnipeg Jets logo. While not awful, when compared to the original Jets logo, it is just lifeless and way too 21st century for me. So those are my three on the bad side.
Agreed. Moving on here. So this is Garrett's question again, and yep. It's coming from our boy Kim Larson. And he asks simply, what has happened with P.O. Joseph, and will he be traded?
Garrett says no. P.O. Joseph has no real draft value. Pittsburgh can use him as cheap depth for now. And I it's only two sentences, but I think Garrett pretty much wrapped up that question pretty well there. There's not much trade value in P.O. Joseph right now. And you can use him as a plug guy when needed. So I don't think there's too much activity on the P.O. Joseph trade front, unless he is a part of a larger deal. But I don't think you're ever going to see him in just any kind of one-for-one swap. Maybe the deadline you get him for a sixth or seventh round draft pick or something like that, but I don't see much value there right now. So I think Garrett pretty much summed up that one pretty quickly.
I think so. I think he doesn't really have a ton of value right now, but let's not forget, like, he played like most of last year. He has a third pairing guy. Oftentimes on the top pair, sometimes like he was kind of all over the place, but he was pretty solid for the Pens last year. He's fast. He can move the puck for sure, and I think a couple of times we've probably forgotten, but he can chase guys down in the defensive end. That speed on defense really played well into the Penguins' hands last year on multiple occasions. I would think it's a bit of a stretch for, what did Garrett say? He has no trade value.
Yeah. I mean, he has very, very limited, I'd say.
He has some limited trade value, but maybe like you said, Robbie, he could be packaged up nicely. I think a team at the deadline looking for a defenseman, that is like the number one commodity at the deadline is defenseman. Yeah. I think that you could get a draft pick maybe, or you package him if you're looking to make a bigger splash.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. All right, question number 13. Going back to Edward here, is downtown Pittsburgh the best area to stay when visiting? Edward said he's coming for a week in April to catch the last three home games, plus watch the Pirates. Any other recommendations for things to do around the city? Edward, downtown has its definite choice of hotels. You can stay at the North Shore as well. That's near. That's closer to PNC Park. And then you can Uber to PPG Paints Arena. But downtown has quite a few hotels to choose from that are within walking distance of restaurants and restaurants and other things to do, and within walking distance of PPG Paints Arena. But yeah, other than downtown's a good place to stay. Any other recommendations for around the city? The Pittsburgh Aviary is just about a little, I believe, northwest, not very far from PNC Park. If you're into any kind of wildlife or outdoors, a very cool place to visit. You have the Carnegie Science Center right down by Acrisure Stadium. Trying to think of some other cool. There's a bunch of cool. You have Heinz History Museum, which is down in that area near the Strip District. The Strip is a very cool place to visit too for a very ethnic twist on things. And if you want cheap knockoff on trademark merchandise, if you want really the best of weird Pittsburgh, the Strip is a place to go. And if you stay downtown, you can get easy access to the Strip as well. A bunch of cool stuff to do downtown, even just walking around and seeing the history of the city. If you are a Pirates fan, the Roberto Clemente Museum is down in Pittsburgh as well. So check that out as well. A lot of cool stuff, a lot of good places to eat. But if it's getting toward April and you're still looking for things to do, Edward, hit us up and we'll get to you again. We have question 14 and 15 that I believe are from ours truly, Snail. So Snail, I will let you grab those and ask them, and we can talk about them real quick to wrap up the episode. You're on mute, Snail. You're on mute.
Shit.
There we go. I saw the lips moving and no sound, and then I saw the mic with the cross over it, and I knew that he wasn't live. So, Snail, I'll let you take these last two. Well, you can ask the questions and
we'll round table them. Yeah,
we'll round table them.
So, I was racking my brain a little bit in my free time about this, and I figured I'd chime in on the mailbag. Let's start with one of my questions here out of the two. It is, who is the biggest home run draft pick? I put in Penn's history, but we don't have to do history because that might involve a little bit too much research. Just for conversation's sake and a little bit of a roundtable here, and maybe in recent memory, who are some of the biggest home runs draft-wise that the Penguins have hit on?
Well, I mean, you got to say Chris Letang, the third round pick, the greatest defenseman in team history. Jake Gensel has to be on that list. And I think there's a lot of guys from those back-to-back cup runs that could be on that list as well. I think you got to put Brian Rust in there as well, in my opinion.
Brian, what about Patrick Hornquist being the last person picked in his draft year?
He was drafted by Nashville, though.
Oh, shit, you're right. God damn it. That was...
Yeah. If that was the Penguins pick, that'd be absolutely maybe the greatest draft pick in team history. But yeah, he was drafted and then traded for.
You're right. I don't know why. I was just like, I just remember him being picked last, and I was like, what a guy. He won those two cups. So yeah, I would have said Gensel. Like, Gensel...
Yeah, that's...
believe it or not, there actually was a little bit of buzz about Jake before he was drafted. Who's that guy up in Canada? The prospect guy. He always talks about the World Juniors and the draft picks. He was talking about Gensel a little bit, and then he fell to where he did. And I mean, that guy, if you could redraft, would you take him top five, maybe? Top six?
I'd have to look at that draft class, but I mean, again, the redrafts are always easy in my opinion, because like you can just look at those draft class, who produced all this great talent. And I mean, Gensel, I mean, 40 goal scorers don't just grow on trees. And I think if you look at that, whatever draft class he was, not many 40 goal scorers come out of these draft classes. And I think that you have to put him on in that top five, top 10 of that draft class.
So that's the year that Nate McKinnon went first overall. This was in 2013. It goes Nate McKinnon, Alexander Barkov. Those are locks. Those are that's as good as it gets. But then after that, it's Jonathan Drouin, who is not having a good time in his career right now. He is, you know, he's on his third team. I don't even know if he's playing every night.
Yeah.
Seth Jones, promising in Columbus, or in Nashville, and then in Columbus, and then Chicago. They've been not the Chicago of old, and I think that's kind of affected his game. That's debatable. And then Elias Lindholm, pretty good player up in Calgary right now. And then after that, this would be pick six, is Sean Monahan, seven, Darnell Nurse, eight, Rasmus Ristolainen, nine, Bo Horvat, 10, Valerie Nichushkin. And then after that, it's like Samuel Morin, Max Domi, Josh Morrissey, Alex Wenberg, Ryan Pulock, Nikita Zadorov, Curtis Lazar, Mirko Mueller. Anthony Mantha is on here, Freddie the Goat, Freddie Gauthier, Andre Burakovsky, Shea Theodore, Marco Dano, Ryan Hartman. So some good players in there. But I mean, Gensel, you can chalk him up to 30 every year. I mean, could Gensel have maybe been like would you take Gensel right now over Jonathan Drouin?
Oh, absolutely. I think the only one that I maybe argue with is like, because when Seth Jones came into the league, I think Jones, it's hard to argue against what you saw from Seth Jones in Nashville, Columbus. So I would absolutely have to put – I think at worst I would put Jake Gensel fourth.
At worst. And I guess if we're really putting the hindsight 2020 on, Seth Jones was only good, I think, in Nashville and in Columbus because he was insulated with really good defense. Nashville had the best decor, like, in recent history. Like, maybe the Blackhawks is another one, the Blackhawks that were winning cups. But they had – you know, Shea Weber, they had that Ellis guy, they had Ekholm. I mean, they were, them and Anaheim were like the D factory for the NHL for a lot of years. And Elias Lindholm's a good player as well, too. I'll say that but Jake is a blue collar type guy, and he's good for 30 to 40 a year. And he pretty healthy type dude. I guess, look, I think I would, it would be hard. Yeah, third or fourth. I guess I agree with you. He could go third, wouldn't have been a bust or a bad pick by any means.
So the Hockey Writers, which is a website, did a redraft of 2013 this summer as like a 10-year anniversary thing. And here's where they came up with. They went, and this is in order from first on down, Nathan McKinnon and Sasha Barkov, which we talked about. Third, he went with Elias Lindholm. Fourth, he went with Josh Morrissey. Fifth, he went with, and this is not a name that I realized was in this draft, was Juuse Saros. That one would be, I mean, goaltenders like that don't just pop up. With sixth, he went with Bo Horvat. Seventh, he went with Darnell Nurse. He was the third guy in this draft that he kept at the original position. Eighth, he went with Mackenzie Weegar. And then ninth, with the Vancouver Canucks, is where he brings in Jake Gensel. And then rounding out the top 10, he went with Oliver Bjorkstrand to the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that list as well. There's some good names on there. Uyghur's a hell of a defenseman. Lindholm's a great player, like I'd said. He's a centerman. Yeah, you'll take a centerman, I think, over a winger if you're trying to build something. Yeah, I think I'd have him a little bit higher than nine, but and that's not with biased eyes either. I think that he's just he's that solid of a player. If you're starting out a franchise, if you're building from the ground up, and you got yourself a good centerman already, maybe, how is Gensel not that just like crowning jewel to a first or a second line?
Tristan Jarry was in that draft as well.
Debatable whether that was fortunate or not.
Now, Greg Wyshynski from ESPN did the same thing. And here's how he went. I'll just run over the top 10 real quick. McKinnon, Barkov. And then at 3, he actually went with Bo Horvat. 4, he kept Seth Jones. At 5th, he went with Saros. He has Gensel at 6 to the Flames. Elias Lindholm is 7. Shea Theodore is actually 8th. Sean Monahan is 9. And Brett Pesce, who went 66th overall, goes at 10.
Good defenseman. I mean, the way his career has been and how steady he is, Pesce as a first round draft pick, top 10 guy wouldn't shock me. So,
Your second question?
We'll move on here to the last of my two questions, and that is I said history again, I think, but like let's just do recent memory. Biggest Pens draft bust.
Derek Pouliot.
That is the correct answer, I think.
Was that as soon as I saw that? As soon as you read that. That came right to my head, and that I was so convinced that Derek Pouliot was going to be the dude back on the Penguins blue line for a decade, and I'm so sad that it did not pan out that way. And he wasn't even like I can't even give him like a Daniel Sprong like boost that like was at least productive after he left Pittsburgh. Pouliot just was absolutely not. Was nothing at the NHL, and I'm so disappointed by that. Two other names, obviously Daniel Sprong, who has found some success outside of Pittsburgh, and then another one, and this is not for anything that he did, but Bo Bennett.
Yeah, Bo Bennett showed some promise, but he just couldn't stay healthy, that poor guy. He's kind of almost like a meme in the NHL.
Yeah.
Pouliot, though, just a couple of the names that came after Pouliot. I mean, Jacob Trouba would look pretty good in your top 4 D on the right side.
Year was Pouliot?
He was in 2012.
All right, go. Yeah, you can keep.
So I got here Jacob Trouba, Slater Cuckoo, neither here nor there. Philip Forsberg would look pretty good in your top 6. Let's see. Zemgus Girgensons, Garrett's favorite player to name to say. Cody Ceci, Tom Wilson would look pretty good in your top 6, middle 6, top 9. 19, Andre Vasilevsky. Imagine how the Penguins would look with a guy like Vassy in net. Tomas Hertl, Turbo Teravainen, Olli Maatta, who the Penguins took at 22, Mike Matheson, he ended up being a Penguin for a cup of coffee, Jordan Smoltz, Malcolm Subban, Brady Shea, Stephane Matteau, whatever happened to him?
I don't know.
Tanner Pearson, and then, yeah, I don't know, not a Teddy Bluger eventually in the second round. Or anyways, a couple of big names, though, that you might like to see that are still having success in their careers behind a guy like Derek Pouliot.
So, what the hell? The Hockey Writers, again, did a redraft in 2012 of this draft. I'll read out here the top 10. Number 1 that year was Nail Yakupov. So, yeah, take that.
What a whiff on a first overall.
Edmonton, their answer to Nail Yakupov was Andre Vasilevsky going 1 overall. Number 2 was Ryan Murray. They've changed it to Morgan Riley. Number 3 was Alex Galchenyuk. They switched it to Tomas Hertl. Number 4 was Griffin Reinhart. Switched it to Philip Forsberg. Number 5 was Morgan Riley, but since he had moved up, that leaves Toronto with Jacob Trouba. Number 6 was Hampus Lindholm, is now Jacob Slavin. Number 7 was Matt Dumba, is now Damon Severson. Number 8, here's the Penguins. It was Derek Pouliot, is now Matt Dumba. Number 9 was Jacob Trouba, turned into Connor Hellebuyck. And number 10 was Slater Koekkoek, turned into Tom Wilson.
I would have taken hella Buck or Tom Wilson, honestly.
Let's see. I'm just trying. I know the Penguins. The Penguins had, yeah. So, yeah, and at 22nd overall, they had they kept Olimata with the Penguins, which I think is completely fair and fine.
He was serviceable. I think you always wish you got a little bit more out of him. He could move the puck. He was kind of a defensive liability at times. He is what he is. Is he still in the league?
Who's that?
Mata.
He might be with the Red Wings. Yeah,
Red
okay,
Wings.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And the Athletic also did a redraft last year, and at number 8 they have the Penguins in this redraft taking Jacob Trouba.
He is a good bruising defenseman that I would take on my team every single day of the week and twice, if not thrice, on Sunday.
That is correct.
Well, thanks for entertaining that. That wraps up the mailbag this week.
That does.
And I believe we got a game here in 2 days.
Yes, they play on
Wednesday.
On the eve of True Thanksgiving, they do play the Rangers. So, I guess at some point that evening, you and I can sit down and crank out a recap of that game. Let's hope that it goes the way of Sunday. That was fun. Let's keep doing more of that. As for Garrett,
who knows what he'll be doing. He's going to be doing I can guarantee you're not going to hear from him.
Yeah, Garrett, we might hear from. If we hear from Garrett, we'll let everybody know.
Sound the alarms.
Yes, we will sound the alarms. We will light the fires of Rohan if we hear from Garrett.
Also, dude, can we just quickly mention, we missed our good pal, longtime friend of the show, Brian.
Yeah, Brian did not ask a question this week, and he was active in the mailbag. He did respond to one of Snail's questions. So, Brian, I don't know, maybe he was off last week and didn't have time to drive around delivering mail thinking of questions, but
he does it on foot. He walks.
Oh, that's right. Maybe he did not work last week and he did not have an opportunity to come up with any questions. But Brian, hopefully we have him back for next week's mailbag. But as for now, that wraps up this week's mailbag. Snail, we'll talk to you again on Wednesday. Garrett, who knows? We'll keep everybody updated on that. And as for myself, thanks for tuning in. And if you do not listen to us again before Thursday, have a good Thanksgiving and have a safe holiday weekend. And we will talk to you after that.